Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and our guests today have both appeared on WILL before, although perhaps not together. Dr. Robert Easter is president of the University of Illinois, and Dr. Phyllis Wise is vice president and chancellor of the University's Urbana-Champaign campus. Not too long ago, I understand Dr. Easter was planning on taking things easy as a professor emeritus, but instead he was chosen by the Board of Trustees to be president of the university after Michael Hogan's resignation last year. Dr. Wise came to the U of I a couple of years ago after serving as provost and interim president at the University of Washington. She succeeded both Dr. Easter, who had been interim chancellor, and Richard Herman, who stepped down in 2009. Dr. Wise's academic background is in physiology and biophysics and related fields, with research in endocrinology. I hope I have that right. And Dr. Easter is an animal scientist who's done research in swine nutrition. And you can ask them about those topics and I suppose also about matters relating to the U of I. Call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Focus 580. Dr. Easter and Dr. Wise, welcome to the show. And Dr. Wise, happy birthday.
Thank you.
And I was wondering, the times in which you both came to your current positions were really times of some administrative turmoil at the university. You're the first permanent chancellor after Richard Herman stepped down in after the admission scandal. Dr. Easter, you were chosen after really the sort of stormy tenure of Michael Hogan. How has that affected the work you have to do in your position since coming on?
I think my experience was that the campuses are just ready to go back to normal work and move forward. And I think we've been able to put that era behind us in a very positive way and engage in the critical issues of the day. And certainly there are many of those, and I'm sure we'll talk about them here this morning. It worked out well because Phyllis and I had actually come to know each other in our previous roles while she was the interim president at Washington and I was the interim chancellor here. So we picked up and continued to have those kinds of productive conversations.
Dr. Wise, how's it been in your front?
So I couldn't agree more with Bob. It's been a wonderful first year and almost a half. Being able to work with Bob Easter as president has been a real joy. Bob really understands the difference between the campus and the university as a whole. His long experience on our campus has served me very well. So it's been a real, real privilege to be working with him.
Well, in the area of getting back to routine matters, let's talk about a routine matter that happens every year about this time, and that's unofficial St. Patrick's Day. And if only we could show our audience the face you made when I mentioned that topic in our introduction. I know this hour that local police are holding a news conference talking about their preparations for unofficial. How is the campus prepared this year?
Well, we always learn from the previous experience, and I think we're more prepared this year than ever before. We want our students to be safe. We want them to be responsible, and we're working toward that.
Okay. I know that this other campuses have similar problems. I've been seeing news coverage recently. There's something, a story you could find from NPR on our website, will.illinois.edu, about Penn State and State Patty's Day. They seem to be dealing with the situation as far as trying to work with bars, local bars, to diminish the problem. Is the U of I in a different place as far as unofficial is concerned?
Well, I think we are looking to work with the mayor of Champaign in particular to try and find ways to deal with this situation so that classes can go on uninterrupted. And I think every university campus has a slightly different way of handling it.
Is it more of a private party situation as far as where the problems are seen compared to bars at this point, or is it really hard to differentiate?
Well, we know that a lot of activity goes on in private homes as well as in the bars, and we are trying to make sure that any host of any party is very familiar with the laws that pertain to entertaining students who are underage.
Okay. Do you see an end to this? Do you see this processing through over the next several years, or do you think that unofficial is something that is always going to be with the Urbana campus?
You know, it's, to me, that's really hard to predict. I don't know what the trend is. I think that we certainly have learned a great deal in terms of how to control the situation, but I wouldn't want to predict whether or not it would go away in the next several years.
There are campuses which have taken drastic steps, like SIU at Carbondale, which essentially created a break period during Halloween, and essentially the campus town closes down during that area. Would that be feasible for the Urbana campus?
We haven't considered that as an option.
Okay. We do have a caller, and I'd like to start things off with the first one. And Lewis from Urbana, good morning. You're on the air on Focus with Dr. Wise and Dr. Easter.
Good morning. Thank you, Dr. Easter and Dr. Wise, for being here with us. And a special happy 29th anniversary to you, Dr. Wise.
I'll take that as a real compliment.
There has been some flurry in the News Gazette about what appears to me may be another scandal that's brewing, and I'm just wondering what's going on. From this individual is being put up for dismissal, I believe, and revocation of tenure and so on at one of the professors here. And from the little history that I've read, even in years past, and it's also up on the he put up a site which is illethics.com or .info or something like that. But anyway, from the little history, it seems that he was suspended for 7 years back at the turn of the decade, and then reinstated, and it seems that he went through a hearing which supposedly cost him a bunch of money, but the committee found him to be not to have sufficient fault to be dismissed. And yet the president is supposedly going ahead with the dismissal procedure with the Board of Trustees. Now, what concerns me is if he's dismissal material and if he was suspended for 7 years, why didn't the university dismiss him at that time? And if he's not dismissal material, why are they trying to dismiss him now? That's just a comment. It's kind of hard to believe that this individual would put up a website and state what he says, unless at least he felt that he was not guilty of whatever you're charging him for. Okay, that's just a statement. Now I have a question. According to the News Gazette, it says that many cases come up, but somehow they're settled on sealed contracts and a deal is made and the people resign and move on. The individual says that the hearing lasted a year and it cost him $100,000, more or less, and that he's making, round numbers, $85,000 a year. And I wonder how he can afford that. How can one really afford to defend himself under those conditions? Not only that, but he has on the site some papers that he got through Freedom of Information, I believe, is full of redactions. Where does the truth lie? I would appreciate your comments. And the second part really is not necessarily associated with the case, but if internal hearings, cost $100,000 and last a year, and then all the papers that they get are redacted, you know, how is one able to defend himself? And I would appreciate it. I know that the university normally says we don't discuss cases that are ongoing, but I would appreciate if you would give the overall or the reasoning behind these long, expensive processes and and I'll just hang up and listen.
Let me just respond in some general terms, because it is the case that we don't discuss in public ongoing personnel matters, and that's in the interest, I think, of the individual, their privacy as well as the institution. So I don't want to get into the substantive conversation about this. But the university statutes have clear processes by which situations are brought forward, beginning with the department, the college, and then the hearings that you alluded to, plus the faculty advisory committee has a role in this. And then these results eventually come to the president, that he takes the advice of the individuals involved, the committees that have reviewed the case, and then forwards it or does not forward it on to the Board of Trustees. So that's the process that's established in the university statutes, and that's how we proceed in these cases.
Is this a process that is it a burden that the accused can afford, whether it's a matter of the labor and effort or a matter of money?
And in some respects, that's an issue that individual has to determine. We have a responsibility to the citizens of Illinois and our students for the wise stewardship of their resources. So the individual has a responsibility, and we as an institution also have a responsibility. And the decisions that have been made over the last several years relate to our responsibilities.
Is there anything, Chancellor Wise, you can say about this?
No, I think that President Easter has responded totally appropriately.
Okay, and I should say that while this is considered a private matter, the accused, Professor Wozniak, has certainly not been shy about talking about it. His witness's website and the News Gazette has reported on it. I think in a couple of instances. I have some emails coming in, and I would like to note that this is a focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and our guests are the president and Urbana Campus Chancellor of the University of Illinois, Dr. Robert Easter and Dr. Phyllis Wise. We welcome your questions for the two of them about the university and the challenges it faces. You can call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, or post your comments or questions on Facebook or Twitter. We're on both sites at Focus580. Email from Susan. She writes, over the last 2 years, many of the top U of I administrators have gotten large salary increases, some of them adding up to more than $30,000 spread over those years. Yet the administration is pushing the food service and building service workers on campus into a strike by refusing to bargain a wage increase that would keep these employees above the poverty line. Susan writes, why is this? Doesn't it send the message that some members of the Illinois family are more deserving of fair treatment than others? And I believe she's talking about the current contract negotiations with the SEIU on the Urbana campus. I think yesterday they released an intent to strike notice, I think 14 days from now, if, as the way they put it, if some progress isn't made during negotiations.
Well, we continue to be talking with them. The situation is in mediation at the present time. We always want to be fair to all of the staff that work at the university, and so we continue to try and negotiate a settlement that will work for both parties.
Do you think that a strike will be avoided?
I sure hope so.
If that's not possible, are you looking at preparations to weather a strike?
Well, we are always trying to be ready to disrupt services the least amount possible. So, yes, we are always in preparation, or we're always prepared for that kind of an eventuality. But I truly hope that that won't happen.
There were a couple of labor relations questions that came to mind, and maybe for President Easter, because while the SEIU labor negotiations are a local dispute for the Urbana campus, there's another union, AFSCME, which is unhappy with the entire Quinn administration as far as how they're being treated. And I don't know exactly what could come out of that, but Is there concern that a conflict between AFSCME and the state of Illinois could lead to a work stoppage that would affect the university?
That hasn't come to us as an issue at this point. I am aware of that, that they're very unhappy with their current situation. State employees are, as it says, as the word says, employees of the state, and that's a different entity than the University of Illinois, although we are supported budgetarily in some part by the state.
And I was wondering, there was a debate that the Campus Senate hosted earlier this month on whether there should be a faculty union, and there was certainly the supporters say they think it's needed to make up for a diminishment of shared governance. And opponents say it would drive some faculty away and hurt faculty recruitment. How do you think a faculty union would affect the U of I?
Ultimately, the faculty or any employee group has the privilege of conducting a poll and determining whether or not they wish to be part of a bargaining unit. That's protected under state legislation. The experience with shared governance that I've had over a 40-year career at the University of Illinois is that it works very effectively. And I think if one looks at highly successful and preeminent universities, our peers of this Urbana campus, you'll find that faculty and the administrative leadership do share in making decisions about critical management issues. And I think that it's that kind of environment that fosters the excellence to which we always aspire and have quite a legacy of having achieved in the past. The governance process here was exercised considerably over the last several years, and I think with the outcomes reflect that the process did work, and the attention of those in leadership roles was captured, and decisions were formed as a result of that.
What do you think of the impact where faculty unions do exist, places like Florida or Oregon and Rutgers? Are they just very different from Illinois, or do you look at them and see, well, that could, whatever is going on there could, and think about what it would mean if that happened at Illinois?
Well, I think since this pertains to our campus specifically, I should say that when we look at our peers and our aspirational peers, none of them are unionized. And so, as President Easter said, the issues of shared governance have been really, really well maintained here. I have worked with faculty senates in the past. I've never worked with one that is quite this dedicated and this committed to maintaining excellence at the university through shared governance and through continual collaboration between faculty and the administration. So I'm really pleased at the way it is now.
Okay. This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking with University of Illinois President Robert Easter and U of I Urbana-Champaign Campus Chancellor Phyllis Wise. If you have a question or comment about the university, call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. And you can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And you can share your thoughts on Facebook or Twitter. Find us on either at Focus580. And we do have some calls lined up. And I want to say hello to Peter in Champaign. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yes, hello. I wanted to ask you a question. It's about the confluence between Chief Illiniwek mascot and unofficial St. Patrick's Day. And as an introduction, in the homecoming parade, I saw a picture in the Daily Illini of the kind of top administrators, including Chancellor Wise, in a convertible car, only one spot removed in the parade from a student dressed as the so-called Chief Illiniwek mascot, which is to say dressed in red face in minstrel show in a highly racist display. For some reason, University of Illinois administrators were willing to not only be in the same parade with this minstrel show, but to also, you know, look, frankly, very happy about their location there. Now, for unofficial St. Patrick's Day, there are shirts being manufactured and sold that bear a pretty close representation to what was the logo for Chief Illiniwek. And so my question is two parts. First, it seems to me that these shirts would represent at least arguably a violation of the copyright that the university, I believe, still holds to Chief Illiniwek. And so I'm wondering why the university is not taking action against the people kind of manufacturing and selling these shirts if they're so concerned about unofficial. And second, I wanted to give Chancellor Wise and President Easter this opportunity to publicly denounce the overwhelming structural racism that's represented by the continued support for Chief Illiniwek on this campus. There's an open letter being distributed, which makes the argument that I think is very compelling, that given the overwhelming support for this particular racist kind of display and representation, the ongoing silence of top university administrators is not only troubling, but represents a real sign of contempt for, in particular, students of color and Native American students and faculty at the University of Illinois and on the Urbana campus. And so I wanted to give this as an opportunity as a public forum to start, you know, rectifying that silence. And frankly, if University of Illinois administrators are unwilling to take a public stand about what I'm sure they as educated people understand to be racist minstrelsy, then I would say shame on both of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, caller. And well, the subject was going to come up eventually. And let's talk about Chief Illiniwek, which certainly has not gone away on either side, as far as the passions and concerns are concerned. Where are things on Chief Illiniwek now?
Let me just begin by saying our Board of Trustees took a position on this issue a number of years ago, and passed a resolution that indicated that that established that Chief Illiniwek is not the symbol or the mascot of the University of Illinois. And so that was the decision of the board. And since that decision has been made, we have pursued the avenues that are available to us to eliminate that in all of its vestiges. The chancellor, I think, in particular on this campus, has been greatly concerned about this and has dealt with effectively the issues of freedom of speech and freedom of expression, and she may wish to comment further.
Yeah, I would like to comment further. I think that we want to respect the freedom of speech all the time, and sometimes we don't control that because we do want to respect that. Peter brought up the violation of a copyright relative to some of the T-shirts that are being sold. We have taken that on, and there will not be any longer any of those sold. I have been stating very strongly that diversity is one of the most centerpieces of my administration, that I believe that this is not only the right thing or the legal thing, but it's a matter of excellence, that the more diverse our student body and our faculty are, the more diverse the people are at any table where there's a discussion going on leading to a decision, the better the decision is. I would agree with President Easter that the symbol of Chief Illiniwek has been a part of our past. It is something that some people really value as part of the history of the University of Illinois, but it is not coming back. Both the NCAA and the Board of Trustees said that this was not going to be in our future, and I think we want very much to figure out ways to be able to go forward in a way that embraces the future and includes everyone. And to whatever extent we continue to look backwards, I think it distracts us from being able to deal with the competition of the future that we must face if we're going to be an excellent university.
And I need to note that student elections on the Urbana campus are next week, and there is a referendum there, a non-binding referendum on Chief Illiniwek.
That is true, and I plan on making a statement about the fact that exactly what President Easter said, and that is that we are not going to go backwards. You know, from a totally biological point of view, both of us are biologists. You cannot go backwards. You must look forwards. If I were to use a biological analogy, when a baby is born, you cannot put that baby back in the womb. And to look backwards and hope that the chief is going to come back, I believe, is counterproductive.
In the chief referendum, I know, is in response to an effort by the group Campus Spirit Revival to look into a new campus mascot, which I think is something that chief supporters would be against, since it would be essentially another move away from Chief Alinawek. Is there any possibility, do you think the time is right, for an Urbana equivalent to Cosmo at the Springfield campus and Sparky D. Dragon in Chicago? Is that going to happen here?
You know, this is a student issue. The students have the responsibility and the privilege of deciding these kinds of things. And we will certainly take whatever they decide as advice.
You're listening to Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about the University of Illinois with two of its top administrators, President Robert Easter and Vice President and Urbana Campus Chancellor Phyllis Wise. You can join our conversation at 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Email us at will-talk@illinois.edu and post your questions or comments on Facebook or Twitter. We're on both sites at Focus 580. We do have some callers standing by, and we'll get to them after a short break. This is Focus. And we're back on Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking today with the Chancellor of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus, Phyllis Wise, and her boss, University President Robert Easter. Glad you're with us on this program today, and we have some callers standing by. I want to go quickly for another comment on the chief. Doug and Thomas Burrell, good morning. You're on Focus.
Yeah, good morning. You know, the chief issue, you know, you say that it's got to die and go back. I totally disagree. The chief is a far greater issue just then within the campus itself and our community. It's a statewide issue. And the chief was done totally respectfully. And once they went in the issue years ago, and I was involved in the early days of trying to, you know, with the whole debate and the discussion when Bob brought it out and Charlene brought up the whole thing, get rid of the chief. We've got rid of the chief with the whole idea of trying to help the Native Americans. And all the work we attempted to do, there's been very, very little work done on campus to help any of the Native American tribes anywhere, even here within our region or across the nation. And so I think it's hypocrisy just to do it, because this was all based on an economic decision. The NCAA said if we want to host any other tournaments or anything, we have to get rid of the chief. And yet that didn't happen in other areas. So, I mean, I totally disagree with your attitude on the whole chief issue, and we need to do something about that. I mean, we can't have freedom of speech trod upon like the university has done. The chief can't march in the parade, can't have him there, can't have him do this. It's disgusting. Anyhow, thank you very much.
Thank you, caller. And this problem's not going to go away, is it?
Well, I think one of the responsibilities I have as the person who directly reports to the Board of Trustees is to deal with the matters that they have passed in resolution. And the board made a decision relative to the chief. It's not my prerogative to change the board's decision. That's where that conversation lies.
Okay, well, let's go ahead to our next caller here with President Easter and Chancellor Wise. And good morning, Mike in Urbana. You're on the air on Focus.
Hello. Hello. How are you guys doing today?
Fine.
The reason I'm calling is because I want to say one thing in regards to the chief. Just because something was a past practice and it was tradition in the past doesn't make it right today. There are many practices that occurred in this nation that were done previously that no longer need to be in society. In regards to unofficial, it seems to me as though the staff, the university staff and faculty or what have you, and also the mayor has a mentality of acceptance towards another tradition that has been around for some time that is not only a detriment to the students but also a detriment to the community. The university is a part of Champaign-Urbana. It's not its own separate entity. I think a lot of people get confused about that, and they're allowing the students to dictate what goes on in the community. And it's taxing to the police department. It's taxing to the medical staff and the EMTs that have to deal with these calls. The crime rate goes up, the cleanup. I think it's processed, and it's something that needs to be stamped out. I don't think that it needs to be an accepted practice or an accepted tradition in this area. If SIU can do it, we can do it. I don't see why they're allowing this to continue to go on, where students every year are either getting hurt, and every year we have students that die so far. They've had deaths. Why are they accepting this tradition? I can't see it. I can't understand it. It shouldn't be a matter of acceptance. It should be a matter of resolving it and getting it out the way. Is it about money, or is it really about safety? If it's really about safety, then it's a tradition that needs to be gone. But if it's about money, then be honest about what you're doing. Thank you. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Thank you very much, caller. And that does bring up, I guess, the idea of town-gown relationships here. And students are a big economic engine for Champaign-Urbana, but they also have a really big footprint in other ways that not everybody appreciates. And being how you're not really a fan of unofficial St. Patrick's Day anyway, how do you deal with what sometimes may look like a conflict of interests?
Well, I have to say we have worked very closely with the town on this issue in terms of both educating the students, urging them to be responsible. Our police chief is working very closely with the police chiefs of both Urbana and Champaign to make sure that things are under control. So we by no means condone the unofficial, but I don't think we believe that we have the power to absolutely stop it. And so it is a matter of education. It's a matter of control. It's a matter of responsibility as far as we're concerned.
I was in Phyllis's chair for a couple of years and struggled with this same issue. We're dealing with adults and the behavior of adults off of our property. And when it's on our property, we can do something about it. And it's a difficult issue, but I've appreciated over the last several years the extent to which the two communities have worked with the university to try to reduce this activity and its impact on our community.
Let me go ahead to an email. As a matter of fact, this came in last night, so someone was looking forward to your appearance on Focus this morning. And Richard writes, over the past 4 years, the University of Illinois has accumulated over $1 billion in restricted net assets, and his source is the U of I audited financial statement for FY12. Richard writes, that $1 billion amount does not even include the endowment, which has been growing strongly too. In layman's terms, the university made a profit of $1 billion over the past 4 years. This $1 billion fund could be spent without restriction, but it is not being spent, even though the needs around the university are enormous and obvious: decrepit buildings, overcrowded classes, and stagnating salaries. Two questions from Richard. Why is your administration accumulating such enormous sums? When you gave your State of the University address to the UIUC Senate Executive Committee in January, you did not mention that the unrestricted net assets of the university have risen by $1 billion over this 4-year period. Why are you not involving faculty in setting the financial priorities of the institution?
Well, I think the reason that I spoke with the executive committee, as I do on each campus, and then when I meet with the three campuses Senate's conference, we discuss these matters. So we do discuss with faculty, and I take advice. The state of Illinois currently owes us $526 million. We have had to make salary payments every month, biweekly payments of others. We continue to make those payments. We've not missed a paycheck for anyone. That comes from internal resources, and we have had to draw on those resources as a place where we make a loan to ourselves, basically, because the state of Illinois is not able to provide timely payments on its obligations to us. And we don't know where the state's budget will be in the future. Our current $526 million deficit, more than $500 million in their payments to us, is the greatest it's ever been. We've never been to this level before. We almost approached $500 million a year ago, but we've never been at the point where the state owes us that much money. We have the capacity to continue to make our payroll, in part because we have very cautiously set aside funds to allow us to do that. I would love to have that issue resolved so we could address salary issues in a very positive way, so that we could address the conditions of our buildings across the three campuses and reduce the amount of tuition that we have to charge our students. But in the meantime, we have to be prepared to deal with a very, very real and current reality.
Well, I'm wondering, if you come to a situation where the state of Illinois gets its financial affairs in order and you don't have to worry about this backlog of payments which haven't arrived, what would happen to this $1 billion in funds?
We would engage with faculty and with our other stakeholders in conversations about the best use of those funds. We would always want to retain a reserve. But we would address some of the issues that I referred to, competitive salaries for our employees, reconstructing and addressing facilities needs across our three campuses, and very significantly addressing the challenge of tuition and providing support for students so that we don't have to increase tuition as has occurred over the past several years.
If I can just add a couple of comments, and that is that we have been, over the last year or so, been going through what we've been calling Visioning Future Excellence. And we've been highly consultative with faculty, students, and staff in terms of trying to decide where we should be putting new investments, where we should be consolidating for excellence, where we should be changing our organization, where we can find new efficiencies. And so I would argue that we actually have been very, very consultative with particularly faculty, but also staff and students as we go forward. And I want to echo what President Easter said. Any big organization like this must have a reserve. It's like your big family. You would never have a situation where you don't have a bank account to rely on.
Thinking of fiscal matters, one of our followers on Twitter asks, how would the looming federal budget sequester, if it occurs, affect research and funding at the Urbana campus?
Well, Bob, do you want to answer for the university first, and I can answer
for
it?
We do have a representation. We have an employee who works for us in Washington and who's in deep conversation with the various agencies around how this will be managed. At a very 50,000-foot level, the sequestration that's proposed is about a $65 million hit to our $813 million this year research funding. Keep in mind, most of our research funding comes from federal agencies. Different agencies are expected to handle this in different ways. The message I got late yesterday relative to NIH, National Institutes for Health, was that would apply both to current contracts as well as funding for future proposals. It's not clear if all agencies will follow that practice or if some will continue to hold constant their current contracts and just reduce the amount of additional funding. But across the three campuses, the University of Illinois, it will have a significant impact on our research capabilities. Dr. Wise, if you want to speak about...
I think everyone knows that we are one of the preeminent public research universities in the world, which means that most of our research is funded by federal grants. So we will have sequestration will have a very big impact on our ability to continue the research that we are doing that is focused on improving the quality of life for people.
I might just add that I was in Washington late in December and back again in early January, speaking directly with members of the Illinois delegation about this issue. Within the last couple of weeks, I've also met with two members in their district offices to talk to them about this issue. It's not just research, though. There's also areas that support our educational enterprise that are important. Graduate medical education in Chicago will be impacted by the changes that are contemplated relative to funding residents during their residency experience. So it is a significant issue for us.
I think what's really important to emphasize is that we think about research but we don't realize all the time that research is really people. A large proportion of most of our research grants actually goes to hiring technicians, research associates, graduate students, postdocs, all of whom are depending upon that for their salaries.
There is still time for your questions for Dr. President of the University of Illinois, Robert Easter, and Chancellor of the Urbana Campus, Phyllis Wise, here on Focus, the phone number 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Email address will-talk@illinois.edu. And let's say hello now. Max, here on campus, has a question about civil leadership. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello, I think that's me, and it's Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Champaign County. I have a question about the labor climate, but I wanted to say that I associate myself with the remarks that are anti-stereotyping and human rights vis-a-vis the chief. And the three-in-one is all Hollywood. The idea of a chief ending a dance with a flying split is ludicrous as anything respectful. It's just beyond discussion in my point of view. But anyway, the last time I spoke with Dr. Weiss on this, I asked about the contract the university has with the notorious and notoriously expensive Seyfert Shaw, a union-busting firm that's nationwide but started in Chicago. $6.1 million was the figure I remember. The university already has a stable of lawyers and people that can negotiate. I wanted to, at the time, Dr. Weiss didn't know about this contract, and I wonder if you've educated yourself. Does the contract still exist? Are we still paying this company to do the work that perhaps should be done in-house and shouldn't be done with a union busting? We have the looming strike by the service employees who definitely deserve a new contract and a respectful treatment by the university. That's my opinion. But I don't know if Dr. Easter knows about Seyfert Shaw, but they are notorious, and it's just absolutely, just from the economic argument, the U of I has enough lawyers and negotiators. I'm getting apoplectic, so I guess I'll hang up and listen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Paul. I'm not familiar with this firm, and $6 million seems to be just off the radar. We actually have a limit of $300,000. So if there was anything of that nature, I'm certainly not aware of it. We do have internal attorneys when there are specific issues in medical malpractice and so forth where expertise is needed. We do engage outside firms. But there are the board has put in place limits around that, and without additional approval, how much we can spend. So I'm not familiar with this case at all, this situation at all, but I will, I'll go back to the office and ask the question.
Either of you, Chancellor Wise, President Easter, is there a use of any outside firms for consultation purposes for labor relations?
If there's litigation, we will, and I'm not aware that in this particular, I can't think of a specific case at this point. If there's litigation around a particular individual or particular case, we will, it's not uncommon to use an outside firm that has expertise in that particular area. But I don't know what the individual is referring to here.
Okay, well, let's go to, I think, the caller I thought I was introducing earlier, and that is Max on campus. Good morning, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Max, and I'm a graduate student in political science and a member of the Civic Leadership Program. And I know we've had a number of conversations on campus regarding CLP, and I was wondering, given what was reported in Saturday's News Gazette, will the removal of the master's degree go through the shared governance system, and will students be given a voice in the restructuring process, or is this not just another way to unofficially remove a program without the advice and consent of the Senate? Thanks.
Thank you. And maybe if we could decode the initials there.
Okay. The Civic Leadership Program is a program that is part of our political science department. And, you know, I have talked with Max multiple times, and so has the chair of political science. This is a program which, in its current form, is financially untenable, unsustainable. And we have been working, particularly the chair of political science has been working to figure out ways whereby we can continue to provide this kind of course to an even larger number of students in a way that we can sustain financially.
Okay. One question that occurred to me, and this is off on a totally different subject, but I believe there's an Illinois House either committee, I believe, talking, to, holding a hearing today on the concealed carry law that Illinois has been ordered to go ahead with by a federal court. And I understand that Representative Naomi Jacobson has sponsored an amendment to that legislation, which would give college campuses some leeway in regulating guns on campuses. I'm wondering about your thoughts on that and on any concerns or comments on the concealed carry law.
We've actually joined with our colleagues at the other state public universities, Northern, Eastern, Illinois State, et cetera, in a request to the legislature that we do have exception from this law. And it was a very poignant conversation because we had at the table the president of Northern Illinois University, who had a very tragic situation, as you know, on their campus several years ago. I think they just had a very sad fifth anniversary of that event. And so our government affairs staff is joining with their peers from the other state universities to request that there be an exception that would give us greater ability to control the weapons on our campuses.
And so you'd like to see this as pretty much a gun-free campus, I guess, outside of law enforcement.
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Something else that comes to mind, plans you have for later this year, a smoke-free campus.
Right.
How does the plans are underway to make the Urbana campus, and I don't know what plans are for Springfield and Chicago, but the Urbana campus, a smoke-free campus by around November?
So that's true. It was passed by resolutions that were supported by students as well as others to make our campus a smoke-free campus. This is very similar to many of our colleagues in the Big Ten. And so right now what is happening is that there are several committees meeting to make sure that we have not overlooked any of the repercussions of this and that we can actually institute it in November smoothly.
Is this 100% smoke-free? You can't walk on the sidewalk, go to a ball game, smoke in your campus apartment with the window open. How does this work?
It is limited to the campus per se and the campus streets per se.
Okay. So, say, a residence hall or housing such as Orchard Downs, would it be there too?
That's right.
Public sidewalks on the campus?
Public sidewalks that we control, yes.
Okay. That's a lot of area to enforce.
It is, and that's one of the things that we're looking into, exactly how we go about doing that.
So that's something that's really a challenge you'll be looking at. The model you're looking at, you're not going to be the first campus.
No, not at all.
What do you think of how it's worked elsewhere?
From what we understand, and we've done a lot of benchmarking with our colleagues, it has worked very well there.
Okay. I think I'm going to get one more call in. And good morning. You're on the air, and I believe this is David in Urbana. Good morning.
Yes. I'm interested in the long-term effect of the sequester on research. It strikes me that a suspension of much research would mean starting over from scratch, or at least significant delays beyond the length of the sequester. Am I right in this?
Yes, you are. I mean, that is the real danger of the sequester, is if we have to let go of students or technicians or research associates, this is something that is much more difficult to restart than just merely hiring new people.
And this would be everything from medicine to astrophysics, I think.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I assume it's always possible the sequester could begin and then Congress could come back and figure out something, and that might still rescue the funding that you would stand to lose otherwise.
Yes. I mean, obviously, if the sequester only lasts for a day or so, the impact would be not as great as if it lasted for a month.
Okay. But a month would still be a real impact.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, let me just add a point that individuals who we've employed to work on projects, if those funds aren't available to pay them, they have certain contractual expectations that we will pay them through the end of a term. that then becomes a burden for the university in general.
Well, at that point, we are out of time, and we've been talking on Focus with University of Illinois President Robert Easter and Vice President and Chancellor for the Urbana Campus, Phyllis Wise. President Easter, Chancellor Wise, thank you both for joining us on Focus today. We hope you'll both be back with us again.
Thank you very much.
Welcome any additional thoughts you have about today's program on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. On tomorrow's show, we'll be talking with travel writer and broadcaster Rick Steves about his life and career. He's the host of Travel with Rick Steves, Saturdays on AM 580, and Rick Steves Europe on WILL-TV. And we'll find out more about Rick Steves' next adventure and his upcoming visit to Champaign-Urbana. Today's show was produced by Lindsay Moon, Jason Croft, our technical director. I'm Jim Meadows. Thanks for joining us on Focus.